You're listening to the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the Gospel of Matthew. And now here's Pastor Sandy in Matthew chapter 24.
You know, before you get a counterfeit, you first have to have the real thing. The real deal has to come along before someone can try and manufacture a copy. Thus, that's why that after Jesus, before him there were no false messiahs, but after him, suddenly, false messiah after false messiah after false messiah, there had been a whole succession of these false Christs. The first one of prominence was in 132 AD. It was a man by the name of Simon Bar Kokhba, a Jewish rebel who led a revolt against Rome. He promised his followers that none of them would be harmed. When he led them into battle, 500,000 Jews were slaughtered. Here's a list of a few more modern false messiahs. Jim Jones. Remember him? Drank the poison Kool-Aid down there in Guyana in 1978. Sun Myung-moon, the Korean founder of the Unification Church, or Moonies. You remember the wacko from Waco? David Koresh. He founded a group called the Branch Davidians. Sergei Torop. Perhaps you've heard of him. He's a former Russian traffic cop who has a 4,000-member cult in Siberia. Benjamin Cream is a nutcase who goes around the world suggesting that a false Christ named Maitreya is alive on earth and awaiting his day of declaration. Jose Luis de Jesus Miranda, he's from Puerto Rico and he's duped about 100,000 followers with claims of being the Christ. And then, of course, in 1997, you remember Marshall Applewhite. He's the guy who convinced 39 followers to commit suicide so they could hitch a ride on the supposed spaceship that was trailing the Hale-Bopp comet. And if the true Messiah, Jesus Christ, tarries, you can be sure that more will follow. Jesus said that there would be false Christs and false Messiahs, and you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. The Norwegian Academy of Sciences has concluded that over the last 3,500 years of world history, there have been 14,531 wars. Out of those 3,600 years, only 292 have been years of peace. That means over the last 3.5 millenniums on this earth, there has been a war in the world 92% of the time. Jesus said there will always be wars and rumors of wars. Look at it this way. There's been 1 minute of peace for every 4 hours of war. Wars and rumors of wars are frequent occurrences. As long as man is in charge of planet Earth, his greed and his selfishness will guarantee that there'll be continual conflict between nations and their citizens. Well, verse 6 says, "See that you're not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet." Jesus is telling us that these false Christs and frequent combat are standard fare on planet Earth. When you see it, don't panic. It's not the end. But nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. And there will be famines, pestilences, and earthquakes in various places. All these things are the beginning of sorrows. Catch this. The Greek word for sorrows, some of you are very familiar with it. It's the word for labor pangs. Labor pangs. You've heard of Braxton Hicks contractions? You know, throughout your pregnancy, you have these false labor pains. They occur irregularly. They're mild contractions. But the childbirth is signaled by an increase in the frequency and force of the contractions. Well, false Christs and military conflicts, they're sort of like Braxton Hicks. I mean, they're going to come. But when their frequency and their intensity begins to peak, that's when you know that the end of the age and the birth of God's kingdom is near. You know, it took until the last century before the earth saw its first world war. Now we've seen two. And for the last 60 years, we've been sitting on the verge of the third world war. Did you know that more people have died in the last century than in any other time in history? The world today is armed to the teeth. Weapons of mass destruction. They're all over the place. More powerful weapons in the hands of more radical people. Did you know there are 42 armed conflicts in the world even as we speak? One scientist was asked what weapons will be used in World War III. He replied, "I don't know, but I know what weapons will be used in World War IV. Sticks and stones, because that's all that will be left after World War III. Notice Jesus also mentions the rise of famines, pestilences, and earthquakes in various places. Every day in the world, 854 million people go to bed hungry. This is astonishing. 16,000 kids die of hunger-related causes every day. One child dies every 5 seconds because of starvation, malnutrition. Every 3.6 seconds, somewhere on the planet, a person starves to death. Every 3.6 seconds. Hey, famine, it's all around us. And speaking of pestilence, every day there are new reports of drug-resistant strands of new viruses. This past March, the CDC announced a shocking study, shocking for all of us parents. It said that 1 in 4 teenage girls in America now admit to having a sexually transmitted disease. Unbelievable. Worldwide, 40 million people now live with HIV/AIDS, which results in 3 million deaths annually. There are 400 million cases of malaria and 1 million fatalities every year. The World Summit for Children, a UN organization, reported every day in the world, 1,400 kids die from whooping cough, 4,000 from measles, 2,150 from tetanus, 2,750 from malaria, those are the kids, 11,000 from diarrhea, and 6,000 from pneumonia. I'm telling you, pestilence is everywhere. And earthquakes. I checked this out. In the last 30 days, the world has experienced 409 quakes with a magnitude of 4.0 or greater. In the last 30 days. 13 at a magnitude of 6.0 on the Richter scale. The killer quake that was responsible for 12,000 deaths in southwest China, it was 7.8 on the Richter scale. An underwater earthquake is what triggered last year's killer tsunami in Indonesia. Hey, catch this. What do Oregon, Indiana, southern England, Japan, China, Trinidad, Chile, the West Bank, Israel, Jordan, Iowa, Peru, Nevada, the Philippines, and Hawaii have in common? Do you think we covered it? What do all these places have in common? They've all been rocked by big earthquakes in just the last few years. According to the U.S. Geological Survey, the 1980s saw 47 significant earthquakes. The 1990s recorded 57 such earthquakes. But from January 1, 2000 until now, the USGS has recorded 109 earthquakes measuring 7.0 or better on the Richter scale. There's been an obvious increase of earthquakes in strange places. Several years ago, Tim LaHaye, you know who Tim LaHaye is, he's the author of the Left Behind series. He was speaking at a Rotary Club meeting in San Diego. He said that for the first 15 minutes of his gospel presentation, the people were completely uninterested. His gospel message was being met with great boredom. That's when an earthquake hit. He said right there in the banquet hall as he was talking, suddenly an earthquake hit. The table started shaking, the walls started rattling, the china started bouncing on top of the plates. It was amazing. He said for a few seconds there, great fear and panic filled the room. LaHaye said that after the earthquake, it was amazing how much more interested people became in his message. Hey, perhaps this is why the last days we'll see more and more earthquakes. God wants to wake people up and help them listen to his message. Wars and rumors of wars, false Christs, they're to be expected over the centuries. It's going to be standard fare. But when wars begin to expand and intensify on a global scale, and with earthquakes and pestilences and famine increase, that's when you know that the beginning of sorrows has come. Well, what comes after that? But the Great Tribulation. God begins to judge the planet. And as he does, the world takes out its anger on God's people, the Jews. This is what's going to happen when God begins to pour out his judgments on the earth. Then they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you. And you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. In the great tribulation, this final 7-year period, we'll talk about that in a minute, the world will see another Holocaust. He says here, they will deliver you up to tribulation. Who's he talking to? He's talking to Jews. The disciples, the first disciples, were all Jews. Right now, the United States stands by Israel as pretty much her only ally. And hopefully we will remain a consistent ally. But how long that support will be sustained remains to be seen. One day, the day will come when the United States will withdraw her support of Israel and join in the Antichrist worldwide campaign to exterminate the Jews. They'll take you up. You'll be hated by all nations for my name's sake. And then many will be offended. They will betray one another and will hate one another. You know, the day is coming when allegiances and treaties among nations will all break down. Intrigue and backstabbing and deception will be the foreign policy of all nations. Honor and ethics and honesty will become relics of the past. And then many false prophets will rise up and deceive many. Even in the Great Tribulation, spiritual deception will reach unprecedented levels. When the Holy Spirit's light and love through His church is removed from this world, all hell will break loose. Darkness will rule the roost. And because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. Cold-bloodedness and ruthlessness and violence and cruelty will even become more commonplace on this planet. But, he says, he who endures to the end shall be saved. Notice this. Real faith in all ages is persevering faith. Real faith is always persevering faith. Colossians 1 verse 23 says to you and me that Jesus will present us holy and blameless and above reproach in His sight if we continue in the faith. Notice the condition. If we continue, faith has to persevere. Hebrews 10 echoes the need for faith to persevere. It says, but we are not of those who draw back to perdition, but of those who believe to the saving of the soul. I'm telling you, salvation in every age involves perseverance. We're told, and this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all the nations, and then the end will come. Now, after the church is raptured, the gospel is going to still be preached. Some folks teach that this verse means that before the rapture occurs, the church needs to spread the gospel to the four corners of the globe. I don't think that's true, not necessarily. For according to Revelation, in the Great Tribulation, God is still going to have His means of spreading the message of the gospel, of spreading the message of Jesus to the world. It's just going to take different forms. Remember, 144,000 Jewish evangelists are going to crisscross the globe preaching the gospel. In addition, two special witnesses will be seen in Jerusalem, again, preaching about Jesus. In fact, in Revelation 14, an angel flies through the sky proclaiming to the world the everlasting gospel. I mean, the good news is still going to be preached even after the church is gone. And if the gospel is preached, the implication is that people will be saved. You know, there are three types of believers in the Bible. Three types of believers. First, there are the Old Testament believers who trusted in the coming of the Messiah before Jesus arrived. You know, they had faith in the promise that God had given them. Second are those of us who are part of the church, who've trusted in Jesus, you know, since His death and resurrection. We've seen what He's done for us and we've accepted His free gift. But there's a third type of believer in the Bible. These are the tribulation saints. These are the people that will decide to follow Jesus after the church has been raptured in the midst of this great tribulation and judgment on the earth. But they are those who will have to endure to the end to be saved. You know, the great tribulation will be a difficult time to be a believer. Persecution will be intense. Opportunities to stumble will be great. Only those with a persevering faith will be saved. For tribulation saints, martyrdom will be the norm. And here's my question to you tonight. I hope you're not thinking, well, you know, if I miss the rapture, if I put off making a decision for Christ, if I miss the rapture, no big deal. I'll still have a chance to be saved during the Great Tribulation. Well, that's true. But here's my only question for you. If you can't live for Jesus now, what makes you think you're going to be able to live for Him then? I mean, if you can't live for Him now, are you going to die for Him then? Better to give your life to Jesus and be raptured with His church. Well, verse 15 continues to describe events that occur in the Great Tribulation, this final seven-year period. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, and whoever reads, let him understand, then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Now let's backtrack a bit. Daniel chapter 9 predicts that 70 weeks or 70 periods of 7 years are determined to accomplish God's purposes for Israel. Daniel lists them. The Bible calls this last week of Daniel's prophecy, this last seven-year period, the Great Tribulation. For 7 years yet to come, the world will be punished, the Jews will be purified, while the church is partying down in heaven. Daniel 9 says that during the midpoint of this last seven-year period, a terrible event will occur on earth. He calls it the abomination of desolation. Jesus mentions it here. And history provides us a parallel so that we can understand the nature of this event. 200 years before Jesus, a Syrian ruler, a man by the name of Antiochus Epiphanes, he tried to indoctrinate the Jews with Greek culture and religion. You see, he hated the God of the Hebrews, as the Antichrist will. And he tried to force the Jews to accept the ways of the Greeks, the beliefs of the Greeks. When they refused, he reacted with a vengeance. On a single day, in 170 AD, Antiochus' army slaughtered 100,000 Jewish males, raped the women, and looted the city of Jerusalem. Antiochus himself entered into the temple and butchered a pig, an unclean animal, on the altar. He forced the priest to drink the blood of the pig and eat the raw pork. He smeared the remainder of the blood on the walls of the temple. And he set up in the inner sanctum, the Holy of Holies, a pagan statue, a Greek idol called Zeus. This was all that the Jews could stomach. They fled Jerusalem and they vacated the temple, leaving it desolate. It was the abomination that caused desolation. And yet, apparently, Antiochus' actions didn't complete and fulfill the prophecy of Daniel. For 200 years after that now, Jesus is talking about the abomination of desolation as being still future. He associates it with the end of the age. Antiochus' abomination was a foreshadowing of another ruler who will rise up in this last seven-year period, in this great tribulation. We call him the Antichrist. And he too will wage war against the Jews. It will climax with his takeover of Jerusalem. This blasphemous ruler will set up an idol, an image of himself in the temple's Holy of Holies. It will be another abomination that will cause desolation. For when it occurs, the Jews once again will vacate the city of Jerusalem. They will leave it desolate. And we're told here in our text that they will escape to the wilderness. We're told, Jesus says, let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Jesus is saying, when this happens, when this abomination of desolation takes place, the Jews will head for the hills. They'll get out of Dodge. I mean, they'll run for their lives. And we put scriptures together. According to Isaiah 16, we're told where they'll hide. They'll hide in the rock city of Petra, which is today southeast of the Dead Sea. You can go there. You can visit Petra. I've read that an evangelist, a man by the name of W.E. Blackstone, stockpiled in the back of these numerous caves, some of these caves, gospel tracts and Hebrew New Testaments, that they're there in Petra today in hopes that when the Jews flee there during the Great Tribulation, they'll be found and read. And the Jews there will see that Jesus is their only salvation. Very interesting. Well, notice verse 17. In that day, Jesus says, let him who is on the housetop not go down to take anything out of his house. In other words, when this fleeing into the wilderness occurs, you know, you don't want to come back and try to grab up your belongings. You know, you need to be ready to leave. We have a hard time understanding, you know, what are you doing on the rooftop to begin with, you know? But understand, in Middle East places today, I mean, the rooftop is kind of the place where people like to lounge and rest and relax. I mean, your rooftop is sort of like your den. The breeze up there makes it cooler. He says, and let him who is in the field not go back to get his clothes. But woe to those who are pregnant and to those who are nursing babies in those days. And oh my, can you imagine trying to flee to the hills? Can you imagine the smallies trying to flee to the hills in a hurry? I mean, where's the baby pen? Where's the playpen? Where's the stroller? Where's the get the diapers? Get those 40,000 diapers that we're going to need over the next 3 days. And can you imagine the hassle of trying to flee in a spontaneous moment when you're nursing a baby or when you're pregnant? You see Clint, come on, honey, come on, come on, come on. You're taking forever. He says, woe to those who are pregnant and those who are nursing babies in those days. And this is in reference, of course, to the exodus the Antichrist is going to cause. And, he says, pray that your flight may not be in winter or on the Sabbath. Hey, in Israel, everything shuts down on Saturday. I mean, transportation and travel become far more difficult on the Sabbath. And here's why. Because 99% of the operators are at home observing the Sabbath rituals. Whenever we're in Israel, we always try to avoid the cities on the Sabbath. We usually go down to the Dead Sea or we go up into the Golan Heights or something on Saturday because the cities come to a halt. And that's what he's saying here. Pray that it's not on the Sabbath day when you have to flee. I mean, the buses won't be running. Verse 21. For then there will be great tribulation such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time. No, nor ever shall be. This abomination of desolation marks the middle of the great tribulation. Revelation 12 tells us that at this point, Satan is going to be booted out of heaven. And he is going to be so furious at God that he is going to turn his attention and his anger and vent it on God's kids, the Jews. This last 3.5 years are indeed a time of great tribulation such as the world has never seen. You can read about it in Revelation chapter 6 through 16. Satan's wrath will make the Holocaust look like a picnic. But remember who Jesus is speaking to here. This is important. He's speaking to residents of Judea. He's speaking to people who observe the Sabbath. That's not me and you. That's the Jews. That's who he's speaking to. He's not speaking to the church. He's speaking here to Israel. Pray that your flight may not be on the Sabbath. That would mean nothing to the church, to a Gentile Christian. But that would mean much to a Jew. You see, at this point, the church will have been raptured. It's the Jews that will be having to deal with this terrible persecution. Verse 22. And unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. Now remember, the church is not the only group in the Bible referred to as the elect. Here's several scriptures. Isaiah 24 verse 4. Isaiah 65 verse 9. Romans 11 verse 28. These are all passages where the Jews also, in addition to the church, are referred to as the elect. Also, don't forget the two purposes of the Great Tribulation. God is going to use these terrible judgments that are going to come upon the earth for two purposes. One, to punish the world for its wickedness. And two, to purify the Jews in preparation for their Savior.
Listening to Bible teaching here on the radio is a huge blessing that many of our brothers and sisters in other parts of the world simply don't have. We rejoice in this opportunity to share Pastor Sandy's messages with you. We do want to be sure to remind you that radio is not a church. Radio should be a complement to what God is already doing in your personal discipleship through the local body of believers that you're a part of. Maybe you're listening today. You don't have a home church. You've visited various places, but nothing seems to fit. First, if you live in the Atlanta, Georgia area, we want to personally invite you to join us for worship at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain. We meet every Sunday morning at 9:30 and 11:15 a.m. For more information, including driving directions, please log on to sandyadams.org and follow the link to the church website. Now, if you're listening outside of the Atlanta, Georgia area and are looking for a home church, we encourage you to log on to calvarychapel.com and find a Calvary Chapel in your area that teaches through the Bible just like Pastor Sandy does each day here on this program. Well, we wish we had more time today, but we've come to the close of today's broadcast. Be sure to remember to join us again as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through God's Word. That's next time on Sandy Adams Radio.